Welcome to Trick Talkers, a podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and of course, other card games as well. I do want to stress that point. Occasionally we do. I'm Patrick, and I'm joined by
Ryan.
And on today's episode, we've got lots of delightful things for you as per usual. First of all, Ryan, I guess we should update the listeners on both our challenges. Just to make it a bit less painful for me, why don't you take us away?
Sure, I will definitely take us away, but I have some painful news to give on an update for my challenge. I have purchased a single game. Now, before you say anything,
okay,
the game that I got was Sailor Moon Masquerade Battle. This is a game from 1992. And impossible to find. Like, the level of availability is just like my favorite Carrera, where we say all these games are very hard to find, but these, there's like that select few that are just absolutely impossible. You can only occasionally get it to find up on like a Yahoo auction somewhere in Japan, and like it's gone the second later. Well, I actually had Ryan McSwain was able to find a copy. So because I haven't been buying anything, I've pretty much been trying to avoid going on Booth, Badoge,
you and me both.
Mercari, yeah, all of the different websites where you can buy things. So I haven't really had my, you know, finger on the trigger on anything, but Ryan McSwain, the amazing human that he is, sent me a message that a copy of Sailor Moon Masquerade Battle was available on Yahoo Auctions. And I didn't second guess it. I have been looking for this game for years and I've been very excited to play it, not just for the theme and the art being Sailor Moon, but just the gameplay itself. So I did break down and buy that game. I have not bought anything else. And I guess to give myself a little extra defense here, I have sold almost $200 worth of other trick takers, of the ones that were on my unplayed list that I have now played and I got rid of, or other ones that I've owned that I finally sold as well. So I feel like that makes up for it a little bit.
I feel like it does. I feel like I can't be a hypocrite and be harsh on you based on what I've come to on my challenge, but it does, to be honest, it does sound like an interesting game. And that's the thing, when you see a game you've been after for years and you know that this is probably, I'm doing that weird thing with my fingers now, your only chance to get the game, then it's hard not to pull the trigger. Couldn't you have done some kind of weird technical thing with him, being like, okay, Ryan McSwain, I'm going to buy you like beers for 2 months and then maybe you just send me a game? I mean, or do you think that's kind of defeating the object?
That's just trying to find a loophole within the challenge. Right. And ultimately, I mean, you're still spending money on a game, whether you're putting an additional item in between it as a middleman, it's still breaking the challenge. Yeah. So while I personally think that I'm doing very well, all things considered, I have technically broken my challenge. I said I wasn't going to buy a single game that was a trick taker, climber, shedder until I played all of those 81 unplayed games. So I have bought a game, but I have not bought any since, and I have sold a bunch in exchange for it. So I think I'm still doing pretty good.
So are we reinstating your challenge, or are we resuming the challenge on the basis that Sailor Moon was a by-the-by that even Marty McFly would struggle to get if he went back in time?
Yes, I am very much still sticking to the challenge and restarting it, if you will. The only other game that would ever make me buy it again would be my favorite Carrera. But at this point, any of the other games that come up, I'm fine. I can wait. I'm sure more copies will show up at some
point. So inserting the Carrera caveat, as they say. I mean, that's a common thing, the Carrera caveat.
Yeah. But the chances of a copy of that showing up, like, is extremely unlikely. Sailor Moon was very, very unlikely, but I feel like my favorite Carrera is even harder to find.
Yes, but Ryan, you know I have a tendency to find these games, and obviously Ryan McSwain's probably listening and thinking, oh, well, you know, he might find you a deal next week. Who knows?
Yeah, but I feel like that game, if anybody's finding it, they're not sharing it with anyone. Not to say that Ryan McSwain wouldn't, but I just feel like if that game pops up, that's not one that people would like post in any Discord server or online and say, hey, look, there's a copy. Like, they're just going to buy it as quickly as and quietly as they can.
That is very, very good point, unless they've got it already. And the chances of that are, sounds like, minimal to none. So hold your breath, but we'll insert that caveat in your challenge as well there, Ryan. So you should be feeling good about yourself. I think you've done a good job. I'm sure everybody would agree so far, selling that many games. You should give yourself a pat on the back, or it's you can't do that over audio, but he's doing it. So
there you go.
That's something, right?
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, to be able to make it to July for that, I think is pretty good, considering the amount of games that I've used to purchase in the past.
And when did you start the challenge? I mean, I should know this, really. I was probably on the episode where you started it, but it feels like it's been going for quite a few weeks.
Yeah, I believe, I honestly don't even 100% remember either. Time is always so weird now.
It is.
It was a month or two after you started your challenge, which was the beginning of the year. I think, actually, if we look back, I'm seeing our Tea Time episode 7 was Challenges Galore. And that would make sense if that was the one where I was instituting my challenge, which was May 2nd. So it's actually been 2 months. Okay, that's not as good as I thought. I thought it was a lot longer.
Wow, it's still 2 months longer than it would have been had you not been doing the challenge.
True. Very true. I feel like it's been longer than that, though. Has it really only been 2 months? My goodness.
Passage of time.
Oh, right? Yeah. Man, I got to get through some of these other games. I got to play them.
You're not the only one. Big backlog.
Yeah. Okay, well, I feel like enough update on my challenge. Let's update everybody on where you are on your challenge.
He says with gritted teeth. So I think I managed... Yeah, I'm just going to say I managed 6 months, Ryan, adhering to the challenge in the strictest way possible. And I remember when I first came up with the challenge, 12 games, can't include, I'm counting trades and print and plays. I was pretty harsh on myself. And I have to say that, yeah, 6 months was all I could manage. And when I was getting to the point when we had the episode with Space Biff and we made up a rule about John Perry games don't count, and then I started getting counters for print and plays, and I thought, well, I'm defeating the object here, really, aren't
I? You're creating a lot of loopholes.
Creating a lot of loopholes. And once you start creating loopholes, you realize that actually, at that point, the challenge kind of has come to an end. It wasn't making me happy, because what I realized was I love the hobby so much and I need to have a little bit of acquisition. I need to enable myself to trade games occasionally to be able to engage with a hobby that in a meaningful way. For me, last year was 125 games, Ryan. That was absolutely insane. I fell down the rabbit hole super hard. This year, since my challenge ended at 12, I hate to say it, but I'm on 23.
Wow, I didn't realize you were that far over 12.
Yeah, but to be fair, one of the games in there was a gift.
How many were John Perry games?
Well, I've got Time Barons and I've also got Scapegoat. There are two John Perry games in there. Some of those games I've just picked up because I'm creating a small parcel from Japan, which includes Savage Bowl and New Chronicle and Robo Trick. So I thought I'd treat myself. It's been a long time since I've ordered a parcel from Japan. It'd be interesting to see at the end of the year how far away from 23 I'll be, and let's hope it's not too far away. But I think I have sold a lot of games. I've sold around 30 to 35 games. It's just crazy how my challenge ended in June at 12, and now we're in July at 23. So
you basically saw that you were going to break through, so you figured you'd just break as hard as possible.
Break as hard as possible. Break. If I'm going to do it, the challenge is broken, and I may as well treat myself a little bit, but I'm going to try and take my foot off the gas now. And that, to be fair, that's only 3 games, is it, from Tokyo Games Market? 3 or 4 games, whereas last year I'd go absolutely nuts and have a kitchen sink size box appearing every other week. So I think we've got to reevaluate where we were, how many we sold, when we look at the overall bigger picture. But I want to thank everybody in various communities, PGC, Trick Talkers, Discord, for helping me with the challenge. And I'm sure, Ryan, you're probably of the same opinion, because everybody's been really supportive of us doing these different challenges. And it shows it can be done, albeit in a six-month caveat Sailor Moon boundary, right?
Absolutely. And I sort of, to add to the sentiment to that, is going back to your, I think it was a couple episodes ago at this point, where you'd said having a healthier relationship with the hobby. And yeah, you went so crazy on buying last year that you were creating this challenge to stop buying as many games. But a couple minutes ago, you just said that you still want a little acquisition. You love the hobby enough. You do want to see what new things are coming out. And allowing yourself to still buy some of these is still acceptable. And again, I think it ultimately comes down to what number is comfortable for you. And you made it 12. And like you said, you were being extremely harsh on yourself.
Extremely harsh.
And then you were sort of pulling back a little bit once a lot of people from the community were like, you're so harsh, allow trades, allow print and plays. And you started to do that. And I still think that's totally acceptable, because the challenge was made for you and what is comfortable and healthy for you to interact with the hobby. So I think even though you're at 23 games right now and almost doubling what your challenge was, and like you said, as soon as you broke, it's only been a month since then.
Yeah.
But I think for right now, it's totally fine. And like you said, everybody from the community has been so supportive with both of our challenges, more so yours than mine, because I just haven't been as vocal on mine, and yours buying the game and limiting on that. Every time you kept posting like, oh, I got another game, and people are like, no, why did you get that? Wasn't one of the 12 to do?
No, not again. Why did you waste it on that game?
Yeah. Whereas mine, it's just like play a bunch of the games I already have. And so like that's the fun part of, I've already bought these games, now let's get them played. But it is still difficult because you see all these other games being played by people, the new ones that are coming out. Like I've finally been able to play Savage Bowl and New Chronicle and all the ones that seem to be the best of the best from the most recent Tokyo Game Market.
Dinosaurs of the trick-taking world, as they say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I think there's a lot of infectious enthusiasm in the communities for the new stuff coming out. It's easy to overlook some of the other smaller games that come out in previous years in favor of what's hot. Apart from some staple classics that seem to hang around, like your Cat in the Box, for example, or your Scout. And so it's just recognizing what you really want in a game, in a trick taker. I mean, certainly it's made me a little bit more fussy about what the game is going to do that's different in my collection. Have I got room for the two games on the shelf that do the same thing? And I've culled quite a few trick takers like yourself, Ryan, climbers as well. So I think perhaps we're getting a bit more critical about what we want from these games, as well as doing some of the essential research, of course, for the folks who are listening to the podcast.
No, I would 100% agree with that. The challenge was pretty much created halfway through creating this podcast. So I think the initial reason for wanting to do this is because we already enjoyed playing these games and we wanted that outlet to be able to talk to more people about it. So I think that was the initial factor of allowing us to then say, oh, well, now, you know, as you've joked, it's the research for the podcast of buying all those games.
Research and development.
Yeah, and realizing that you don't need that many to still have good research and have a conversation on an episode. So I think it's good that we've both been able to find the level that's comfortable for both of us and still have plenty enough to talk about.
Right. And you've already said, you've mentioned you've played Savage Bowl. You said you played New Chronicle. Do you own the games?
I do not. I've only played them through playingcards.io.
But that just goes to show that you don't need to own all the games. You can still do the research and then we can still report back to the listeners. He says, I say, as I bought those games, but that doesn't matter. You can engage with the hobby in whatever way you're comfortable with and whatever way you can afford.
Yeah. And so I do want to eat my hat, I guess, you know, if I want to use that expression.
On, salt and pepper.
Yeah, on episode 18, the Fading into Oblivion episode, where we talked about games that were hot and aren't anymore or weren't.
Yes.
We made some guesses on what games we think weren't going to be hot anymore. And my guess was Savage Bowl.
Savage.
Having played it and just seeing all the other buzz from other people having played it, I want to say I'm probably going to be very wrong about that guess. And of course, when I made that guess, that was before anyone had played it. It was only during that like hype of, oh, people should get it because the art looks good. But with the gameplay, it is very enjoyable. It is very fun. And it seems to be the one of the top games from this year's Tokyo Game Market for a lot of people. And a lot of plays are getting, like, I've played it, I think, 3 or 4 times now. It's basically like a slightly better version of HeFu, where you're trying to get a specific number of tricks. And after you go out, you bust and you are out for the rest of the round. There's a couple more layers to it as well, but it's actually very enjoyable.
Yeah, I've heard comparisons to Voodoo Prince a little bit as well. Don't know if that's a valid comparison. I haven't played it myself. Sounds like you might have picked this game up where you're not doing your challenge then, Ryan.
Absolutely. I would be lying if I didn't say I was eyeballing the Ninja Star Games pre-order because they had some copies of Savage Bowl go up. And today is July 4th as we are recording. They sent out an email yesterday for people, if you're signed up to their newsletter, to get early access to the pre-orders. And I made sure I didn't check my email so I would forget about it. And I actually did. I only saw it today. And by the time I looked at it, they sold out all of their copies. So thankfully, I didn't have to worry about that.
Well, if you'd have bought it, I would have had to give you a yellow card for your challenge. And I'm joking, because, of course, there's a yellow card mechanic in the game for those who don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bought it. Like, I know I'm sort of joking about the fact that it was available there, but it's been very available through other channels and people making orders. So I definitely could have grabbed it by now if I wanted to. But yeah, I know that is going to be a game I will purchase, though, once I start buying games again, because I like it. It is a lot of fun.
And without getting too thick into the bushes, something like that. I can't think of the expression, but never mind. Your opinion, very briefly, you Chronicle, you said you've also played that. Does that have a Red 7 vibe? Somebody said Red 7.
Yeah, I can't fully speak on it too much because I've only played it twice, and the first time we were taught it incorrectly. It was basically the person who taught it to us was taught to them, like, earlier that day, and they didn't remember all the rules. So yeah, but anyways, it has a similar vibe to Red 7. If anyone's familiar with Red 7 by Carl Chudik, it is a game where when you play a card, you're always trying to make sure that you are winning. Whatever rule is in place, you have to be winning after you play that card. You Chronicle does the similar thing of where when you play a card into the trick, you have to be winning. But the crazy thing is that every trick that happens stays out in play. So like after we resolve the first trick, the winner of the trick doesn't collect all the cards and put them to the side and then lead the next one. You leave all those cards face up and you leave them in a row or a column, however you want to orient it.
Okay.
But then on the next trick, when you play a card and then you start resolving that trick, you have to look to see the card you're going to play when it's winning. If you have to change the rule, which the rules you're changing are things like trump, the number for trump as the color of trump, and if a lower number wins or if a higher number wins. And when you're playing this card, when you're changing the rule, you're looking at all of the previously played cards. And if you change a rule, is no longer winning, you have to flip the card over and you lose a point for that. That's a very brief, bad explanation of the game. But yeah, that is essentially what it is. So it's pretty brain burning the first time you play it. And it has that puzzly Red 7 feel to it. If you've ever played Red 7 before, I think you could see the comparison.
Yeah, it sounds quite different from the standard trick-taking game. I use that term very loosely, of course, because there's so many different ones within the genre. But we look forward to hearing more thoughts on that. I've got that coming, so we'll probably touch on that again in the future. On to our next segment then, maybe, Ryan. Now we've given our bad and good news for the challenges.
Yeah, I think we can move on.
Okay. So if you've been on your travels in a now hopefully what is a post-COVID world, fingers crossed, you're out and about or you've gone on a trip somewhere, games that you take with you while you're traveling. I know we touched on this on a previous episode that we were going to do it. So I'd be very keen to know, Ryan, what goes in your bag, your quiver? What kind of carrier do you have for your games?
Well, I've got a Trick Talkers tote bag now that I use almost exclusively for my card games at this point.
What else would you use? That's a stupid question of me, isn't it, really?
Exactly. Yeah. But before that, it was usually just various tote bags of other kinds, whether it was a bag you got for free from a convention from some publisher or a grocery bag that we have. Just toss it in a tote bag. It's easy for that. When it's the bigger games, then I start bringing out that all play massive board game bag.
Board game bag.
Yeah. So we actually have, so what normally Patrick and I are pretty much heavier into Trick Takers than Climber Shedders. So we tend not to talk about climbing shedding games often on here, but we wanted to make sure that when we made a list like this, that we covered both of those categories. So we are going to have a few games on both of those sides. So I think we'll probably just start with the Trick Takers and then we'll do the Climber Shedders. And then we also have a couple of the other card games, which are the non-trick taking climbing games that we would want to toss in as well.
Just because we do talk about other card games occasionally, right?
Exactly. First on my list was probably not one you'd be expecting, and that is just a standard deck of playing cards.
Curveball.
Yeah, that is without a doubt the easiest thing I could recommend for anybody to throw in a travel bag. Standard deck of playing cards you can get almost anywhere. There's so many variations as far as art and style, whatever you'd like for it. And you can play so many games with a standard deck of playing cards, whether you're proxying a modern game or just playing a traditional game with a regular deck of cards. There's so many things that you can play with that. And trick taking wise, there's of course the classic hearts and spades you can always go with that are a hard recommend for me. So that would be an easy one to toss in.
Yeah, just don't do what I do. I've got some bicycle decks on the side and a couple of them are street magic decks, Ryan, and some of them have got like repeat cards in them. Some are kind of glued together. So whenever I go to take the standard deck of cards, I always have to double check all the packs to make sure it's not the magic trick cards rather than the trick taking cards. Don't want to fall into that trap.
Has that ever happened before where you're playing a regular game and you didn't realize that you start dealing out those cards?
I have brought cards with me before that turned out to be street magic cards, and it kind of ruins the illusion because I say, oh, no, actually, you know, that pack was for a different purpose, but you don't want to give away the trick, but it's been given away. Here I am talking in trick taking terms and I'm on about street magic. Who would have thought?
Yeah. All right. Did you want to do one from your list? Do we just want to go back and forth?
Sure. Yeah, we can alternate between the two. So I have a 12-chip trick. It's a homemade version when it was difficult to find originally. And they're just little black and red chips. I throw in a little bag, got numbers on them. Great little game. The tactile feel of it. The fact you can just take it on the train or wherever and just play it. Or the pub, of course. Sticky tables don't affect little counters as it happens. So needs three players to shine, of course, to work, but cracking little game that goes with me everywhere.
Yeah, and actually Mandu Games is publishing a new version of it that's going to have the 2-4 player count for 12 chip trick. It's currently a 3-player only, which the game was designed by Root. The designer's name is Root, not the Root the game.
Yeah, not Root the game.
Yeah, but the new version is supposed to allow 2-4 players. So we'll see what that looks like. The rules are out, so you can actually read them. I believe they're on the BGG page for it. So yeah, if you want to take a look at that and see what they are. But the proxy ability of this game while you wait for the official Mandu version is pretty easy because you can get any object and just like Sharpie numbers on it, whether it's pieces of paper or like blocks of wood or something. It's pretty easy to make a proxy for, or just use a regular deck of cards, just 1 through 12, and just have
100%
black and red colors appropriate.
Be interested to see if the components number was changing for the 2 and 4 player rules. I didn't actually know that, but I would like to try it. Wonder whether it's one of those ones that you play it 2 and 4 and think to yourself, oh no, it should just be 3, or whether actually we might be surprised.
Yeah, I can't remember if the components changed. I looked at the rules a long time ago, but I don't think they did. Not confident though.
Well, the official edition looks lovely, actually, the artwork. So if you're in the market for it and you fancy a little pig with a hat on, you can't really go wrong.
It does look great.
100%.
All right. Well, next on my list is actually on your list. And this is the only game that we have
that's crossover. Unbelievably.
Yeah, which is pretty funny. So the next game is For Northwood, and this is designed by Wilhelm Sue. And this was actually the one game that sort of sparked the conversation of wanting to do this topic. Because For Northwood is a solo-only trick-taker. And it comes in a cute little box with these plastic cards, which plastic cards can be sort of a love it or hate it type thing. If you love plastic cards, then you can't go wrong with this game. These are just amazing, flexible, will last forever. But then also they're very slippery. And when you're like shuffling, they can like slide and kind of flop everywhere if you're not careful. But this is the best solo trick-taking game. There aren't that many, so it's an easy competition to beat out, I think. But I personally think that this is the best solo trick-taking game.
I'm someone who doesn't do solo games, Ryan, and apart from Food Chain Island, Button Shy, For Northwood's the only solo game that I've got, really, that I enjoy playing. And it's so different from all the other trick takers for that reason in the collection. It's great just to pull out with the plastic cards. You don't need to sleeve it. It's a breath of fresh air. And don't look at the cutesy artwork and think that this game doesn't have depth to it, because boy, oh boy, there's a lot of replayability in the box and with all the scenarios. So I think it's a lovely one to have in your travel bag, especially if you're on your own, you've got to do some journey on your own on the train or whatever, and you've got some time to kill. It's a great little game to have on you.
Or you're with a family and you need a 10-15 minute break from everybody. Go
100%.
Off, yeah, on your own and play a game of this. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Like you said, the scenario booklet is really good. The different ways you can set up the game. So I guess to give the brief overview of it, I realize the past games we're not really saying how they play. We should probably do it a little bit.
Animals, but without context, it's fine. Yeah.
If we're talking about making a list and the games you should bring with you, we should probably at least say a little bit how they play.
A little bit of context.
Intrigue, you know, to if you don't have it, to try and get it. But anyways,
100%.
Yeah, For Northwood, easily available too. Out of the games on this list, it's probably the most readily available. A couple of them. But anyway, For Northwood is a solo trick-taking game, as I mentioned. And the idea is there are different fiefdoms where you have these rulers that you place out. And the fiefdoms rank from 0 to 7, which essentially are the locations that you're going to be playing tricks to. The number of that fief is going to tell you how many tricks you have to win, the exact number of tricks you have to win. So if you go to the 3 location in that round or in that hand, you have to win exactly 3 tricks. At the beginning of every hand, you get 8 cards, and then you'll choose one of the locations or the fiefdoms that you want to play at. So you at least have information in your hand, because each ruler has a suit associated with the deck. Whatever suit they are is the trump suit for that hand. And then you have assistants or allies that give you abilities that you can use to help manipulate your hand before tricks are played. But trick play is dead simple. All you do is flip a top card from the deck, and then you must follow suit from there. The theme of this game is really good, too. Essentially, you're having a conversation with that ruler. When you flip the top card over, it's like them starting a topic, And then you're playing a card by following up on that topic. If you follow suit, you're just, you know, continuing that conversation. But if you play off suit, you're like starting another topic sort of related to that, but not. So it's just, it's really cool.
Yeah, I really like the way you phrase that, actually, with the starting a conversation. If you feel like a bit of a Dr. Doolittle and you want to talk to the animals, have the conversation. I like it, Ryan. When you first said fiefdom, I thought, wait, there's no robbers in the game. And then, of course, I realized you were talking about not thieves, of the little animal places, the little animal tea houses that you visit, whatever we want to phrase it like. Actually, just wanted to throw in there as well, don't be thinking it can be a purely solo experience, because my friend's actually got this game and he plays it with his partner and they both try and work together to try and find different tactics to play, or they have an input in the decision-making process about what cards to play. So could be a nice one as well to play with a friend, family member, partner. Don't know if you've tried that, Ryan, but strikes me that it's ripe for it.
Yeah, actually, the two times I've taught this game to somebody else, I just say, here, you play the game and I'll just sort of stand by, and watching that game can be just as fun as playing it, because it's ultimately just a really good solo puzzle. You're trying to puzzle out your hand and figure out how you get the exact number of tricks and using your allies' abilities at the right time.
Yeah, you are kind of like the Northwood guide, and then they're entering the kingdom for the first time. And we could go on, couldn't we? I'm creating like an weird kind of RPG story around Northwood here. It probably doesn't need it. It's good on its own. Yeah.
Well, what is the next game on your list?
So next on my list, I have got Trick Taking in Black and White. Now, the predominant reason why I suggest this game is because it's a tiny, tiny, tiny box. And this game is by, I probably should say the designer's name, Satomu Dejima. I believe that's... we got the ball over the net, didn't we? As they say. But that game, I haven't sleeved it. Couldn't find the right sleeves, to be honest, but probably doesn't need it. It's such an inoffensive size trick taker to take away with you. Really love this one, actually, at three players. It seems so simple. Can be quite mean, actually.
It's very mean.
It is, yeah. Which is misleading because of the cute little bears on the suits. In a nutshell, explanation for this one. All the cards have got two numbers on them and two suits. There's a white suit and a black suit. So whenever the white or black suit is led, you are always in suit. You just have to choose a side that you want to play. And you're trying to get a balance of black tricks and white tricks to get points. If you fail to get a balance, all of your tricks are negative points. So it's a bit like Reiner Knizia's game, Odd Socks. Was it Odd Socks?
Yeah, Odd Socks, Relationship Tightrope, Zen Master, the different variations of it.
There's many different variations. However, this comes in a very cute little format. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, the box size, as you said, it's so tiny. Like, this can fit in your jean pockets. So that's why I think it's a good selection for travel games. Because even if you don't bring a bag of a whole bunch of games, you just want to bring one single game, this would be great for that. It's so tiny. The fact that the game can be a little mean, both in trick play and scoring, because the idea is, like you said, to get an even number of black and white tricks. If you do that, you'll score positive points, whatever that is. So two white tricks, two black tricks, you'll score 4 points. But if you're off at all, you score those as negative points. So if you had two white tricks, three black tricks, you're scoring negative 5 points. So the swing in this game can be pretty aggressive. It can make the game sort of a love it or hate it. So I would say maybe be mindful of that. But if you really like the puzzle of trying to figure out how to match those tricks appropriately, because as Patrick said, you always can follow suit. Every card has black and white on it. Knowing which cards you'll duck with because they might win in the other color and vice versa can be a really fun puzzle to try and solve. And that is why I enjoy it, is trying to figure that out, that perfect balance, which is what you're supposed to be doing every hand.
No, no, Ryan, I think that's a very black and white explanation. And with the meanness, I think you just have to ask the players to bear with you when you're playing and because all the cards have got bears on you. It's otherwise known as Bears, this game. I thought I had to get that out in the open, that pun. I've been holding it in for too long.
That's true. The game, if you ever in the Portland Game Collective server, you'll probably hear this game referred to as Bears more so than Trick Taking in Black and White. Now, that might be a little different in today's server level, just because there's so many people in there now that this game doesn't actually get talked about as much. So when people are talking about it, they're
sort of died to death.
Yeah, it might have. Yes, but when people do talk about it, they're using the full name. But it used to be like a year or two ago, it was only referred to as Bears. And when someone new would join the server and people were talking about Bears, it always, what game are you talking about? Because they would try and like Google it or search it or, you know, go on BGG. Yeah.
Where's Bears? How'd you write Bear in Japanese?
Yeah, you'd never find it. There's another game that's called Bears that has like these weird dice that people would always joke it was that game. But yeah, that's just a fun little backstory of why you've probably heard the game just called as Bears, beyond the fact that the cards have bears on them, which is also pretty self-explanatory.
And the Bear fan base. The Bear fan base and the people who didn't like it. I think you're right. I think it's a love it or hate it, but your mileage may vary.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up on my list is a game that should be on everybody's list on any list you ever create if you're talking about trick-taking games. And that is Schadenfreude, which is designed CTR. Yes, or Scooty Fruity, however you choose to pronounce it. I feel like we've talked about this game so much on the show that we can probably be brief on the rules explanation for it. It is such a good game that is always something that you should put in your to-go bag, no matter where you're going, your to-go to stay at home bag, even if you do that. I don't care. It deserves to be enjoyed by everybody. So bring it with you wherever you go.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give that, even though it doesn't exist, it does now, the Trick Talkers Essential Award. As in a game that we think is pretty much essential to a trick-taking collection. Schadenfreude. I think I said
that
it
was
right.
Pretty close.
There we go.
There was the effort, though. You put in the effort, and I appreciate that.
I think it deserves it. Would you agree with the essentiality of this game?
Absolutely. As I just said before, this belongs in everybody's bag. So it's
not many games we say this about. Yeah. So, you know, but this is one.
Absolutely essential to belong with everybody. Everybody own this. Buy it right now. That's an aggressive thing to say.
There we go. And we don't pressure to buy normally, but this game, if you like trick taking, there we go.
It's not going to be for everybody. I don't want to say that.
We have to caveat.
Yes, I don't want someone to buy it and go, man, you said to buy it. Everyone should play. Why didn't I like it? The part of this game where the second person winning the trick and the busting, it's just always a good time, but it might not be your cup of tea because of the randomness and the chaoticness that can happen, especially at the higher 5 player count when you're off suiting so often.
Well,
it can be very mean, but sometimes it's not even like targeted mean because it can be kind of random, especially towards the end of the hand when you have very few cards and you're off suiting. And you're like, well, I don't actually want to give you 6 points. I kind of wanted to give it to somebody else, but you're leading and this card's going to go to you. So like that can be problematic. But I think the game itself is so lighthearted and it is chaotic that it's fine because that the game knows what it's doing. And it's just so good.
It won't be hard to move it on as well. And if you know people in the hobby. So worst case scenario, it will find a good home.
For sure. All right. Next on your list.
Next on my list, I'm going to say The Crew, and pretty much everybody's heard of this game by now. And if you haven't, well, where have you been? The Crew, Planet Nine, or Mission Deep Sea. I haven't played the latter, but I'm going to put both together because I think this game by Thomas Singh, nearly forgot to say, give credit to that wonderful designer who's brought joy into so many lives and has introduced so many people to the hobby in a modern sense. But The Crew is a game that can be taken away on a trip with a group of people, and then you can just so much replayability with all the missions that it contains, go through the whole mission book with the same group of people, share the joy, share the moments of excitement, and the different challenges each mission will set probably doesn't need too much explanation because The Crew is so out there. Whether you like a space theme or an underwater theme, that's up to you. But I'm sure you'd agree, Ryan, The Crew for when you've got a few days away with the same group really, really shines.
Yeah, the replayability, getting that same group to play it trick or hand after hand, night after night, as you go back to missions, try and get through the new missions.
The meta game.
Yeah. You end the night on mission 12 and you're like, all right, it's new morning. Let's start up mission 13. Let's get through it. It can be really cool and really satisfying to complete those missions together with a team over that long period of time. The one thing I will say that you might want to be careful about with this game is if you're introducing it to some of your family members that aren't really prepared for a cooperative trick taker.
That's the thing.
I've heard a lot of stories of people try and introduce this to their family members, whether they're someone who grew up on spades or Yuko or no trick taking at all, or they just have that competitive feeling and they always are trying to win all the tricks and not actually work together. And you have to keep explaining, no, like you only need to win this trick. Steve over here has to win that trick. Stop trying to win everything. Just be mindful that when you go in to really let everyone know this is a cooperative trick taker and just know that it may not go over swimmingly. And that was me trying to use a pun for the water version.
No, I liked it. Swimmingly, they might say, what planet are you on? We play competitive games, right? So I feel like we've exhausted it for the crew, but next game.
Yeah, next game on the list. My Favorite Things, which is going to be reprinted pretty soon as My Favorite Things. So this will be more readily available. This is designed by Daiki Owayama and Pepe R. And this, I believe, belongs on the list because it's a great party trick-taking game. Definitely more party-forward than trick-taking-forward. The trick-taking definitely takes a backseat, but it allows there to be more of a game than just shouting out icebreaker stuff. But the idea with My Favorite Things is everybody's writing a category and then you're ranking your five favorite things on that category, with one being the most favorite and five being the fifth most favorite. But then there's also a zero where you write something that you hate or don't like at all in that category. So if my category was pizza toppings, I'd write five of my favorite pizza toppings and then a pizza topping I don't like. And everyone's doing this simultaneously and you're already in the categories and then you're playing trick taking. And you're doing that just by looking at the topic or the answer written on the card. Because when I write, if I wrote cheese as my number four topping, I know the number there, but Patrick wouldn't. If I'm handing the cards, he's playing trick taking with mine. He doesn't see the numbers because they're hidden behind the card that I wrote cheese on. When we play the tricks, at the end, you reveal the numbers. So what you're trying to do is deduce what you think are their favorites and then what everybody else is playing in the categories and the names and the topics they have, what they play, and then try and guess where their numbers are. So it's a very fun icebreaker party game where you're trying to deduce things and it can create a lot of fun conversations with people.
So that's an interesting point here, Ryan. Slightly off topic. What pizza topping is your favorite and what pizza topping is your most hated pizza topping?
Meats in general, like a meat lover's pizza would probably be my favorite. So it's not an individual topping, it's all of the meats. But if I picked one individually, it'd probably be chicken because I like barbecue chicken. And then my one that I'd hate would probably be anchovies, classic gross anchovy pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not too fussed about anchovies. But you see, what my point I'm trying to make here is My Favorite Things. I've not played it. I know about it, okay? And part of the reason I know about it is we talk a lot about it. But we've just learned that about you on this episode. So imagine a game that is My Favorite Things that allows you to really get to know people that you're playing with. And that's the spirit of the game, right? So obviously the listeners know now to avoid anchovy pizzas. But if they pick up this game, they might find things about the people that they know, people they care about, whatever. And strangers even. It's a great icebreaker, like you said. So I think it does deserve a place.
And it's relatively simple to make a proxy of it if you wanted to, since it's currently not available. That new version coming is not out yet. You can just get a few number cards that you can rank 0 to 5 and then put it in a sleeve and then put a note card or something in front of it that you can write on. Get Sharpies, or not Sharpies, get dry erase markers to write on the cards. So it's pretty easy to make.
Yeah, it's a great shout. Just like with 12 chip trick as well in terms of proxy ability.
Next on your list.
Next up on the list, it's a bit of a funny one. I put Tanuki to Chagum. I don't actually... this is by Kenji Mishima. I don't actually love this game. I think it's okay, and I'm going to put that in big block capitals, Ryan. Okay. Okay? I think the artwork's lovely on it, done by Saibepu. But of course it is. It's size artwork, right? And the idea of the game is that you play in cards and you bid on how many tricks you're going to take. And there is a what they call a tanuki, which looks like a meerkat with an umbrella. Is that a fair assessment? Or a raccoon of some sort?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't want to offend Japanese folklore here. This is just my interpretation of it. That occasionally hides in a teapot. And very, very occasionally hides in a teapot, should I say.
Yeah.
That's the main mechanic of the game, but it doesn't happen that often. To avoid the player taking a trick. Now, the reason I've included it, and that was a very brief summary of the game. There is a little bit more to it. My memory fades a bit. But the reason I've included it is because it's such a small little box. And it seems to have gone well, down well with some of the people that I play games with, play trick-taking games with. They request it. What about that game where the thing hides, they say. So I go, oh, do we? Okay, all right. Here we go. Let's play Meerkat Umbrella. Okay, so I put it on there because I think the artwork is adorable. The little stars you get for the bidding and things. There are people out there who probably love this game and really like it. And just for its size and portability, I think it's worth throwing in the bag and seeing if people want to have a go.
While I'd agree with you that it's very much just okay, I actually think this might be a good entry level or slightly above entry level trick taker, mainly for the fact that the tanuki hiding in the teapot not happening often. And we talked about this on, I think, like our second ever episode. We talked about this game a little more in depth. So if you want to listen to more about it, you can go back then. But I think the fact that the hook of the game doesn't happen as often, which is why we had said it wasn't as good. The hiding of the teapot is supposed to be the twist and it doesn't happen. I think that actually makes it a good entry level because the trick taking in the game is relatively straightforward. It adds bidding, yes, but then it does have a twist that can occasionally happen. So if somebody's trying to learn trick taking and is getting introduced to it or has played maybe one or two, this could be a good step up where it's not so crazy that the twist is happening so often it's hard to follow and figure out what's the right time to do it. It can be introduced to them a little bit more slowly because it doesn't come up as often and they can see what a trick taking game can do and then start to play that game a few times and then open up their world even further with all these other ones that their hooks happen all the time.
I think you're right. I think entry level is great. And I introduced this game to a friend who had a head injury and he was recovering. And I brought this game round. He plays a lot of card games and it was a nice and easy one to play with him, to be able to understand it post-trauma and be able to pick up because it's got such a nice ramp on it. So that's why it's on the list.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And that is going to be it as far as our list for trick-taking games. Now, this list could have been a mile long, but the whole point of this is it's supposed to be a small, tiny bag, so we only wanted to include a couple on there because we're still going to go over some climbing, shedding, and non-trick-taking games.
Believe it or not.
For the bag. But the idea is the bag's supposed to be about 5 to 10 games, and what would those be? I do want to also say we asked this question to the people in the Discord server about what they would put in their to-go bag. So we're actually going to read some of the games off of their lists. And you'll see a couple games have some overlap with ours, but then also a lot that I wanted to put into our list, but I knew was answered by so many because it's a game that also deserves to be in all the bags. So we'll talk about them more when we get to that point. But for now, we'll go into the climbing shedding games. And the first game that I had on the list is Dog and Cat the Team, which is designed by M2K. I really enjoy this game. It's a little chaotic. It's got powers and abilities like on all of the cards, and then there's these special cards that have even crazier abilities. So every time you're playing a card, you're doing something wacky. But it is a team shedding game where you're on the dog or the cat team, and there are the two suits, the dog and the cat suits. And the really cool hook of it is the goal is to shed out, like most of these games, and depending on the suit that you shed out with, you will score a certain number of points, either one or three. If you're on the dog team, you want to shed out with a dog card to get 3 points. But if you shed out with a cat card, you only get 1 point, and vice versa if you're on the cat team.
So I've just got to open on BGG because I've heard of this game before, but I've not really looked into it. The opening strapline is players are pretending to be cats and dogs in this climbing, shedding team game. Ryan, I had 23 games today. You're tempting me, and dare I say, you're milking it, you know, for this. Just had to get that in.
I mean, I would think this would be worthy of the 24th game.
Oh, it could. Well,
it actually,
I'm going to fall into this.
Okay, you would love this game. Remember how you're always talking about a Nana whenever you collect the 3 cards of whatever animals on it, you have to make those animal noises? In this game, when you are down to your last card, Uno style, you have to, you know, and normally in Uno, you say Uno. In this game, if you're on the dog team, you have to say Bow Wow. And if you're on the cat team, you have to say Meow Meow.
Wow. Well, I think that might be the nail in the coffin. I think that might just be the Achilles heel of my parcel from Japan right now. So frantically goes to look up dogs and cats, the team. We can have a 5-minute break while I'm joking. So that sounds really interesting, Ryan, actually. And one thing I would like to ask, have you ever played Llama before by Ryan Akinitsio?
I have played that pretty often with my family. They love it.
Right. So how does this compare to Llama?
Llama...
Very, very briefly.
Yeah. Llama's a little simpler just because there's no abilities on the cards. You simply are going from one to Llama and then back down to one. And in this game, it has this sort of same idea of you're going up to numbers and then the ones can beat the higher ones. So it does have that loop cycle again. Okay. I would say that Dog and Cat, the team, is a little bit more of a game than Llama. Llama does have some fun choices that you can make when it comes to deciding of passing or trying to draw for more and worrying about the doubles. But I feel like Dog and Cat, the team, I have to say the full name every time, I feel like, has the potential to have more strategy or even tactics, more likely, than you would in Llama. It is a pretty good comparison, though, between those two.
Okay, because you said Uno, and I thought, yeah.
Yeah, Llama's not on my list, and only because I put this game on my list. Llama was originally there, and then I was like, no, I want to actually talk about this one more. But Llama is more readily available, and if you want to get a similar feel and vibe to that, I think Llama's a good choice as well.
Potentially Dogs and Cats have got a bit more to it, and you Meow Meow Bow Wow. So it's, yeah. Apples and oranges, as they say.
Yes. Well, what is your first climber on the list?
So how do I segue from the cat and dog team? I mean, this is difficult. I can only do that with, of course, Taiki Shinzawa's Ambient Abyssal, which is well known for winning an Ambient Abyssal award, as you may have heard on previous episodes. Ambient Abyssal is it is the Ambient Abyssal version, of course. There's another version called Planet Etu, or is it Planet Etuk?
The publisher did officially give the answer on the Kickstarter page. I forget what they said, but I thought it was Etuk, but I could be wrong. Anyway, this
Etuk,
game.
Etaiki. So it's Taiki Shinzawa. That's where I'm going with it. So this game, you're basically competing to, you're playing marine creatures, if you've got this version, if you've got the other version, you're aliens, and you're trying to play cards to shed out, as you'd expect, and you're able to either play colours, because all the colours have got different rankings, or play with numbers, and all the numbers from 1 to... 1 to 6. There we go. Shows how much I know about this game. You're playing from 1 to 6. So you're trying to play one card or 2 cards at a time. and you're looking at what people have played before, and you're trying to beat them. So once you've determined whether the player before you is playing with numbers or colors, and perhaps it's not clear straight away as cards go around the table, it will become clear. You've got this clever thing that happens when you've got your hand of cards as to what do you hold back for later because you'll be using them as number sets, or what do you hold back for later because you'll be using them as color ranking sets. And there's quite a few different colors within the deck that all outrank each other. So it is what I would call Mask Men light, as another way of describing this game, where you have Mask Men, you've got the different wrestlers and they're outranking each other. While this one is a simplified version of that, it's a great, I think it's a great introductory climbing game actually. And this really shines at three players. I haven't even bothered, Ryan, playing this at two because I've heard it's just not good at two players scoring-wise. So easy to take, certainly in the Ambient Abyssal form, if you're lucky to find it that way, because it's a small plastic clamshell. Not sure on the box size for Planet Etook, but still worthy of taking along with you.
Yeah, no, that's summed up very well. I think that is a good option. The next game on my list is a twofer, and that's only because one of them is not currently available if you were to buy the official published version, and that is Bacon and Haggis. Bacon, you would have had to back the Kickstarter from Allplay, but you could technically play both of these games with a standard deck of cards. But both of these games are designed by the one and only Sean Ross, has been making a lot of games that can be played with standard decks, and Bacon is one of the newer climbing shedding games from Sean that, like I said, was on Kickstarter recently with Allplay when they did all four trick-taking games at once. And why I'm putting them together is because it ultimately depends on your group and which one you'd prefer. Haggis currently, if you got the original version, only plays 2 to 3 players, but there are new rules that can play 4 players and even 5 players. But the 4 player is in teams. You can play in teams of 2. And Bacon allows you to play in 4 or 6 with teams of 2 or teams of 3. So if you've got a big group of 6, Bacon is a great choice for that. It's also a really good, another good intro climber. And I feel like all the climbing games that are on my list are all ones that are more designed or geared towards entry level. I'd say Haggis is probably a little bit more beyond that. You're getting into intermediate level at that point. But Bacon does this really cool thing where the winner of the trick essentially normally just leads the next trick. But in Bacon, you can ask your teammates if they want to lead instead. So it does this really cool thing where sometimes you'll mess up your hand a little bit. You'll throw out a bomb or something to win the trick to allow one of your teammates to lead, because maybe they're close to going out, because just like most of these climbing games, the goal is to shed out all of your cards. And the first player to shed out determines which team will score points. So there is this really big race to being the player to go out first. Then depending on where the rest of your team goes out will determine the number of points you score. If the other team goes out first and then your team goes second, third, and fourth, you know, you're not going to get any points for going second, third, and fourth. You had to go first. So it's really neat. I personally haven't played it a lot. Probably been like 3 or 4 months. I played it a couple times, but I'd really like to get back to it. Haggis, most of the time I'm playing it is at 2 players. But I'll let Patrick, I've been talking a bunch here, so I'm going to open the floor to Patrick a little bit.
It's cool. The food items that Sean seems to love. Haggis is pretty much a classic in my collection. Great game. Great 2-player game. I have played the 3-player rule set, did dig that quite well as well. But when I think of Haggis, if I've got another person with me, it is a go-to 2-player climbing game for me. I think it's very clever. And as you said, Ryan, I think that's perhaps at the more intermediate level. It's a game that demands replayability. It demands to be replayed to try and figure out the tactical decision-making that you need to make when you're forming your hand in terms of what melds to play to the table, when to play the right bomb. The timing is everything in Haggis. So a lovely game, as you pointed out. Bacon, I've played it at two player. I played it, a new variant for Sean there. I played it at four players and I played it at six players. I really like Bacon. I want to make it very clear. The reason it didn't work with my group was because certain people within my group are not very conducive to team games. They like cooperative and competitive games. However, I believe that Bacon is a really lovely alternative as well to Teach You, which is a four-player game, which to me is quite obscure. If you're teaching it, it's quite a difficult teach. Whereas Bacon is actually really light and breezy, so I think Bacon is a wonderful replacement for that with easier melds and can be played with the standard deck of playing cards, albeit you do miss out on all the lovely Bacon artwork.
Yeah, the artwork from the all-play version looks very fun. All the different food options on the different cards.
There we go. So I think that's a great inclusion there, Ryan.
Next up on your list?
Next up on my list, Wild Horses. So I've gone for Tokami, which is designed by the same person who also designed Tanuki to Chagum. That is Kenji Mishima. I believe Tokami is a far superior game, in my opinion, if I was comparing the two games side by side, but also has a really, really small form factor. Does go back in the box sleeve, though, with the ultra thin sleeves, which you'll be pleased to know, Ryan. But that's a wonderful little game where it's a puzzle. I've played it with three players only so far, and I think for me that's where it shines. You essentially have a draw pile. You've got two piles of cards face up. On you go. You're putting a card from your hand on either of the face-up piles. If you can put three numerically ordered cards together, that's great. You can get rid of three cards. If you can't do either of those things, you can't put a card down because you're trying to put cards down that can form sequential numbers based on what's been face-up already, then you have to take all the cards from one of the piles. And if you can, you can put a set of three cards down, a three of a kind. I believe it's three of a kind. It's either three of a kind or three sequential cards down. I haven't played it in a while. But when I did play it, I do remember really, really digging this one. So that's Tokami, Medieval Japanese Horses. And if nothing else, it's certainly better than Meerkat, Umbrella, Teapot.
Yeah, was
that clear? Was that crystal clear?
Clear enough to me. I still haven't played my copy. I actually bought one for $5 on Surakaya.
Okay.
Soon after the first time you had mentioned it, because it was available on Big Cat Games for a while. Yes. And I think that's where you said you got your copy from. It was relatively cheap from them as well, and I just always passed on it. But after hearing you had talked about it, I was very intrigued, and that's one of my games on my unplayed list since I got it so long ago. But I'm really excited to eventually get that played.
I will say brutal scoring, because you literally, everybody loses points for the cards remaining in their hand at the end of the round. So I think each round we were doing minus scores. But if you know that going into it, and it's trying to solve that little puzzle, which is to me part of the appeal, and trying to get that positive score, trying to better yourself, there's some replayability there in trying to master the game, which keeps me interested.
Yeah. No, I think that's actually great, and it's a sort of good segue into the final climbing game on my list that sort of deals with negative points in hand based on cards you didn't play, mm-hmm. and that is 535, designed by Kenichi Kabuki, and the newer English version is available through Port and Game Collective, so this game is readily available should you get the new version. Trying to find the old Japanese version, just get the new English version.
Oh, you want the new one.
It's the same art, and we put in some fun point tokens in there. But anyway, this is a fantastic, lighter climbing shedding game that plays pretty well at all of the player counts. Six players can be very hit or miss, it can be one of those where the game goes on forever or it's over in one hand. Because with 535, the sort of the fun bit of the game for the name of the game is 535 because there are numbers 1 through 15, but the 6 and the 10 are removed. So 1 through 5 is 5 cards, 7, 8, 9 is 3 cards, and 11 through 15 is 5 cards. When you play cards into the main central meld, as we called it, you can play up to 3 cards, and they can be a run or a set. So same numbers. But the cool twist of this game is that in most climbing games, you're always playing higher than the previous meld in play. Whereas in this game, you can actually add cards on. So if I played a pair of ones, Patrick would normally have to play pairs. But in 535, you can just add another card onto it, another one. You can add up to 3 cards. So if you had the other 3 ones, you could add them on as well. And it creates this fun dynamic of the fact that you can look at certain cards in your hand that usually, like in climbing games, there's always that stinker. There's always a card that you have, oh, this is a perfect 5-card run and these go well as pairs, but then I've got this other 3 here that's just garbage and is going to do me nothing. But in this game, you can add it on later, so it makes it easier to get rid of those stinker cards. And the other neat thing to it is that when in most climbing games, you're always the higher the card, the better. But in this one, you can actually go down. Whenever you're playing runs, it actually goes the lower numbers better. So it turns a 1, 2, and a 3 into a pretty powerful run because it's the lowest run.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to jump on there, Ryan. I think it's interesting because you have a use for the lower cards. You've got a use for the higher cards, the middling cards. Every card in that game is important. There's no card that's a dud. A special rule with the 8s, I think, having a use case, because we often play a lot of games where you get a hand and you're like, okay, well, I just need high cards. If I've got low cards, I'm absolutely stuffed. Whereas this kind of turns that on its head, and just being able to track your score with the new addition, of course, with the point tokens is really helpful when you're passing the game state, having the lovely player aids in there. So I think kudos to PGC for the re-release, of course, and the game itself, it deserves a place on the shelf and in the travel bag. I think this is a lovely inclusion.
Yeah, certainly. And the only thing I'd say is, again, at the 6-player count, you got to be careful just because, like Patrick was saying, how every card can be useful. The problem is in 6 players, it can take too long for your turn to come back around. So the card that you were trying to add, or you had that run that was going to work, 3 people before you have messed with it, and you just sit there and you can pass a bunch without getting to play. And if somebody goes out, you've got your whole hand left and the game's over in one hand. So
yeah, that can suck, right? I only played this at 4 players, I believe. So I think that's the best player count for it, according to BGG at least anyway. So
2-player is also very good.
2-player. Oh, actually, no, I have tried it at 2-player, and I did enjoy it, actually. It was quite breezy. The rounds went really quick, and it was quite snappy. So, yeah, I think 2-player is a good count as well.
All right, well, that is all of our climbing games. Next up will be the other card games, any small box card game that is not a Trick Taker, Climber, or Shedder. And, Patrick, if you want to start with the one and only you have on your list that's actually a crossover. I didn't realize we have two crossovers. On the list.
There was only one crossover that, of course, was a Trick Taker Climber, but this one, Nana Christmas, depending on what edition you've got. Wouldn't be surprised if we see a Halloween and a Valentine's Day version coming out soon, but I'm not dropping any hints. I'm just completely speculating.
Sure.
Again,
sure.
Cool. Just some great ideas for the designer, which is Kaya Miyano. So hopefully they're listening and will produce more editions of this lovely game. This game is all about trying to collect sets of numbers. Ideally, if you can get 3 cards that are 7s, you can win the game outright, these shiny gold 7s. Or if you can get 3 sets of 3 different number cards, or 2 sets of number cards that add up to or subtract to make 7, what you're essentially doing is you have cards in the middle of the table, you're going around and you're asking other players, do you have, show me your lowest card, show me your highest card, and you're trying to get cards that are the same. And of course, if you get all the cards that are the same, you can do what my group does, as Ryan pointed out earlier, and make stupid animal noises that kind of represent the animal. Probably not going to do it now, because it would be weird if you were like, okay, well, I don't know, think of one of the animals, and I'd be like, I'm really awkward, I'm on a podcast, I can't possibly do it, and that would just be weird, right? But that's how I'm just going to quickly move on, just in case you tell me to do it. That's how the game works. It's a lovely little box. The Sai Beppu artwork, in my opinion, there are other versions of this game, like Trio, the French version. For me, Sai Beppu artwork is the only way to go with this game. If you have the other version, because that's what you can get access to, that's fine. But I think it really adds something to the flavour and the desire to, certainly for my group, to want to play this. It's such a fun little game. It looks like it's going to be nothing. You read the rules, don't you, Ryan, and you think, oh, that's rubbish. I mean, it's just the basic. But then you play it and you realise, no, the social interaction here is elementary. It's great.
Yeah, it's a very good non-gamery and gamery game. Getting anybody together, all family members of all ages, can enjoy this. It's one of those where you explain to people it's a memory deduction game, and everyone's always like, oh, I'm so bad at it. My memory's terrible. I hate deduction. I'm not going to be good at this. And it's okay, because it's a lighthearted enough game
that can still be fun.
Yeah, and everyone's having fun. But then when they actually do remember the cards, like, just it feels good when you can get them. And, you know, if you know, theoretically, like, you should have remembered where the three cards were, and then you pull the wrong ones, everyone else at the table, like, knows where they are, and they're just waiting for you to mess up. Yeah, it can create some good moments whenever that happens.
The right blend of memory and luck, this game, I think. And even if you get I believe there's a bigger Korean version. The Koreans made a bigger version of it. Even if you get that version, it's still travel size, right? Whatever version you get, at least in the under the title of Nana, then its portability is great.
And the art's still the same. It's just the like symbol for Nana being in Korean versus Japanese is different, but the card art is all the same between those two versions. I actually owned both of them at one point, but I gifted the Korean version one to my family after we played it because they loved it so much.
Of course you did. Have you got the Merry Christmas? Sorry, the Merry Christmas version. The Christmas version.
The Christmas edition.
Say Merry Christmas.
I do, yes. I still own the original and the Christmas one currently.
Right, that adds a little rule, but you can always incorporate it into the Nana game, right? Happy Independence Day, whatever you guys want to say.
Yeah, it can be included in any version. It's just easier with the Christmas one because there's little presents at the bottom of the cards to remind you. But it's pretty much just all the even numbers except for 12. So it's not too hard to. It's just another thing you have to remember.
So there we go. And that is Nana. Great game.
Yeah. All right. The one game that's on my list is Dr. Seuss Grinch Grow Your Heart.
Oh, yes.
I've talked about this game in the past once, and I'm bringing it up again because this game is really good. For being a game that's designed by Funko Games, like Funko Pop brand, it's a really good IP-based card game. And you can get it for like $6 or $7 on Amazon. Or if you want to go to your local game store, you could probably get it for like $8 or $9 or an online place. But it's like super cheap.
After Ryan's really taking his 10% commission. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's basically Yahtzee with cards, would be the quickest way to explain it, where every round, one player is the Grinch and everybody else are Whovillians. And you're trying to make the cards in your hand match a specific criteria that you're going to go for that round. You don't have to decide until the end of the round what you're going for. Similar like Yahtzee, like you don't have to call, I'm going to go for four of a kind and hope you get it. You wait till after the roll and decide what's best for you. Well, in this one, you're doing the same thing, but with cards. You draw cards from a deck, and then you'll discard a card, and then you'll draw a couple more, and then you'll discard until you eventually have a hand of five cards. The cool thing, though, is whenever you're the Grinch for the round, you can take one of the cards from the Whovilles, I mean, the Whovillians that discarded a card. Instead of just drawing a random card from the top of the deck like the Whovillians do, the Grinch player can actually take a discarded card. So it gives them a little bit more options to pick from. And the Whovillians will always discard their card simultaneous. So you can't really like plan appropriately to like make sure you don't discard the same card. Because if you discard a five and I discard a five, and you know the third player playing with us is the Grinch, they can just take both those fives and now they've got two fives in their hand. And the Grinch just rotates every round, so you'll always get to be the Grinch an equal number of times. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It plays really fast and it's Grinch art. So if you like the Grinch, I think it'll be good for that as well.
Okay, so just to add to the explanation on this game, you do realize this was the game that ruined the Grinch movie for me, Ryan, because I explained to you when you first talked about this game, I have never seen the Grinch till the end. Well, I tried to see the Grinch till the end about 3 or 4 months ago, but I remember you saying, you know what happens at the end, don't you? And I kind of linked the title of this game with the ending, and it's, I apologize to anyone else who's not yet watched the Grinch, but
spoilers. Anyway,
spoiler alert. I think I might know what will happen now, but anyway, I digress. It sounds cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a good choice. I recommend it for as cheap as it is. And after one play, if you don't like it, it's such an easy game to gift to somebody else who you think might like it. So 100%, can't go wrong.
100%.
All right. Well, that was a pretty long list for Trick Takers, mm-hmm. Climbers, Shedders, and other card games. But we did have a couple honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions.
Because you always got to throw up some honorable mentions in a list that's just like mandatory. And the one that I had on my list, I've not actually played.
Okay.
But it's only because it's very well themed, and that is Twin Palms by Christy B.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I've watched two players play a game actually on BGA when it was on Kickstarter to see if I'd want to back it or not. Ultimately didn't, but Twin Palms has a beach summer theme, and
just for that,
in the middle of summer and going on vacation, it just seems like it'd be a perfect fit for it. I've heard pretty mixed reviews on it in general, and again, I haven't played it myself. The one time I watched it was many months ago, so I really don't remember a lot from it. What I vaguely remember is that you can play like pairs of cards, and I think you're like trying to hit a bid that you go for in the round. I'm not fully clear on it. I just thought it'd be a good honorable mention specifically for the theme itself. So if you want to look into it, that would be my honorable mention recommendation.
And I heard even if you don't like it, it's one that's easy to palm off onto someone else.
It might be.
There we go. Drum roll. Palm. Yeah, anyway.
What is your honorable mention?
My honorable mentions, there's a few. I'll read through them very quickly. Trick Raiders by N2. Lovely small game. If you take it out and sleeve it like me and put it in a deck box, a bit less portable, but still portable. Hatchy Train by Toshiki Arao. I believe that's how it's pronounced. Wonderful little game. For me, it replaced Scout, although I still own Scout. That is a discussion which we can dive into another day because that is going down a rabbit hole. Catchy by Yuko Wai. Lovely little two-player boxed game. Very, very cute and a wonderful entry to trick-taking for someone as well, I believe, that one. You knew it was coming. You know, put it on here. It's obviously our Echo because it keeps getting recycled every episode in a thematic way. By Susumu Kawasaki. If you're lucky enough to own the original edition, which I did, gave to my sister, kind of regret it a little bit, but got the new edition. Still nice. So our Echo, always talk about it. Don't know why, because the game is okay, but I feel like if I sell it now, it's sacrilege. Just some very quick button-shy games. Seasons of Rise by Corey Damey. Wonder Tales by John Keane. And Revolver Noir, Xavier Davidson. The reason why Revolver Noir, Ryan, I put on there is because it's actually a game where you can just hold the cards. You don't even need a table to play it. You can play it in a queue. So, wonderful little two-player game if people like assassinating each other in 5 minutes. Worth a look. There we go.
Yeah, Button Shy is actually a good honorable mention. They have a lot of small wallet games, 18 cards or less. So those are great.
Some of my favorites.
Toss a couple of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a big, long list of some games that we recommend you'd throw in a little to-go bag, whether you already own them or are looking for a couple new games to buy for your travels. Like I said, we asked a few people in the Discord server what they put in their to-go bag, and I'm going to read those off now. Okay. Quite a few of you actually responded, so I'm going to try and read to them pretty quickly, but you're going to notice a lot of overlap on certain games, and that's because these are the best games that deserve to be in everyone's to-go bag, and they clearly are. So first up, we have Rat P. Fink. They said they bring two regular deck of cards, Schadenfreude, Nine Lives, Nokus Dice, Cockroach Poker, and Yokai Septet, and occasionally teach you if they're with their wife and another couple that knows how to play.
They've got an essential in there, Ryan, now. They're a Trick Talkers essential game, so they've very well thought out on that list.
Absolutely. I think almost everyone who responded has 100%. That game on their list. Yeah. Wesley responded. And so when I first asked the question, like I said, about 5 to 10 games, so Wesley gave their 5 and then the 6 to 10 after that. Okay. So we've got Voodoo Prince, Boast or Nothing, Mask Men, David versus Goliath, and Tatsu.
Great choice.
And 6 to 10 would be Doppelkopf, Frank Zoo, Haggis, Nokus Dice, and of course, Schadenfreude.
Of course.
Yes, the essential. Next, we had John, who said they bring a lot of two-player games, which they have Dickory, Claim, Fox in the Forest, and Fox in the Forest Duet, which I think are great options for two players. And then for their 3 to 5 player bag, they said it rotates, but they always bring Schadenfreude.
Of course, it's essential.
Yes. Next, we have Justin, who said Scout, Bonanza, Arboretum, Nokus Dice, For Sale, Kites, Inside Job, Mino Dice, Nana, Schadenfreude, and Yokai Septet.
Ooh, lucky the mix.
So at this point, yeah, before I read the rest of the people's, Yokai Septet and Nokus Dice, those are two games that show up a lot that I would also have put on my list, but I knew we were going to talk about them a bunch here because everybody puts them in their bags. Those are great choices.
Yeah, wonderful little choices. The thing with Nokus Dice for me, I've got a bag full of dice that I carry around with me for it because I proxied with my copy of Parade, but that is an excellent choice. Yeah, and of course the dice don't get damaged very easily, so great choice for portability.
Yeah, the only reason why I didn't really put it on my main list is because of how brain burny and how more intermediate to advanced level of a trick taker it is. I think it's a fantastic game. I said it belongs in the Hall of Fame. I want to create a Hall of Fame trick taking building and make that the first inductee into the Hall of Fame. It's so good. But I didn't put it on my list specifically because usually traveling with family members, probably not playing that one as often.
Like the idea of a Hall of Fame. So I went in there with the Essential Award, and now Ryan is up the stakes.
Just making up all these things.
Now we're upping the stakes. We've got a Hall of Fame to do at some point. So we're looking forward to doing that.
Too many things.
Yeah.
But in my defense, I did actually say that in a Discord server yesterday or 2 days ago. So I don't want to take away from your Essential Award. It's a great thing.
No, I think it's nice.
All right, next up, though, we have Pastor Aaron. They said they would bring Nana, Best of the Super Slime, Fuji Flush, Sixes, and Enemy Anemone.
Ooh.
That is actually a new Must Not Follow game from Daniel Newman that's been getting a lot of buzz, being a good entry-level Must Not Follow game.
Yeah, it's actually one of the people in the group was kind enough to make me a print and play, so Enemy Anemone is on the way to me at some point, so looking forward to trying that and giving the thoughts on it as well.
Nice. Yeah. All right, we just have a couple more. Keith said, depending on who they're traveling with, if it's with gamers or non-gamers, they have a slightly different list. The For Gamers list is For Northwood, Boast or Nothing, Bridge City Poker, Yokai Septet, Voltreffer, and The Crew. And with non-gamers, it would be For Northwood, Boast or Nothing, Tindahan, Delt, Scout, and The Crew. So a couple of things get changed up depending on.
Boast or Nothing. How do we miss that, Ryan? Because really, that is a great little game to take away as well. Can't put everything on that.
It's a good introduction style trick taking game. Fun Trump, obviously amazing art on it. So yeah,
the cloud
that's
people.
A good one on the list. And actually, the only person that's put that on their list so far. So is Boast or Nothing getting overshadowed a little by some of these other games? I don't know. I feel like it's well loved and talked about often, But I feel like everybody already has a copy of it.
Can't overshadow the clouds, can you? I mean, no. Boast or Nothing is a wonderful crossover between gamers and non-gamers as well. It's a game that does service to both types of people. So I feel like because of that, it's so universal when you're taking it away as well. So yeah, maybe it's because of all the newer stuff, although there were still some classics on there, weren't there? So hopefully Boast or Nothing will be a staple for a long time to come.
Absolutely. All right, just a couple more. We have Mohammed said Llama 535, Nana, Rezarkana, Mandala, Cocopelli, which they're including a couple board games here.
Interesting.
Yeah, a little bigger boxes. Really cramming in that travel bag. But actually another Boast or Nothing on there.
Nice.
Hachi Train, Photograph, Trick and Trade, and Planet Ituk.
Yes, Photographs, another nice one by Saki and Saki. Sachi and Sachi, sorry, is a lovely, lovely illustrated game, and that's a really nice card management one and set collection type game as well, if you're into that. So that's a good shout.
Yeah. Next up, we have David said Regicide for Northwood, Skull King, Scout, Yokai Septet, depending on the people, and Nana. So lots of Nana for Northwoods. Yeah, first Skull King we get on there, actually.
Interesting, because I regard that pretty much as a classic party game trick taker that tends to lean itself to a lot of good social situations as well. So it's strange there's only one mention of it, but again, there's so many to go at. You can't have them all.
Of course. All right, we had Cabbage King said Skulls of Sedlak, Similo, Meow, Best Candy on the Block, Tranquility, and hey, look, we have another person for R Echo.
Wow.
Or R Eco.
R Eco.
You keep making me say R. Yeah, R Eco.
Reco, I need to Reco, R Echo.
Yeah.
I thought I'd never hear another listener bring that game up, so I'm really glad somebody has.
There you
go. Kudos to you, Cabbage King, and very pleased to hear you are also enjoying a game of recycling.
Yeah, a couple others they threw on their list was Catchy, Claim the Crew, Ebbes, Schadenfreude, and a Badger deck, which is essentially a big deck of cards that you can use to proxy a bunch of games.
I've always been calling it Ebbes. Is it Ebbes?
Yeah, Ebbes.
Well, that's typical me, isn't it?
Pronunciation for it, yeah.
There's a new version of that, right, as well, which looks...
Yes, Hund, which was announced recently. It'll be dog-themed or dog
that's
art.
That's a better theme. It was very beige. I'm not saying anything about beige games here, but Ebbes is a game I've had for a very long time, and it's sat on the shelf and not been pulled out by anybody, so I'm really hoping that game gets played soon. But great show.
But the postcard from the designer.
Did have a postcard.
It's so good.
I just didn't know what to do with it though, Ryan. That's the problem. I didn't. People might be intimidated if I sent it to somebody without any context.
But you're just hanging up on your wall.
That's so true. I missed a trick.
Klaus Geis is the designer of Ebbes, and when you'd purchase the game, depending on where you got it from, but that's if you got it from like the Etsy store, you'd get the postcard, which includes him sitting in a chair with a cigarette and a hand of cards with a bottle of champagne in the background and just like sitting with his leg crossed. It's amazing. It's so good.
Yes, but
we'll put a picture in the show notes.
Definitely needs the context. Don't like send it to an auntie or uncle without any context, because they'll be like, well, you've changed a bit, right? So, yeah, give them context, then it's a great inclusion. Nice little touch there by the designer.
Yeah. And lastly, we have Stato said they actually just got back from holiday with some friends, and the games that they actually packed and played were The Crew 2, Velanimo, Scout, Bridge City Poker, Inside Job, Cat in the Box, Nokus Dice, Fuji, Flush, and standard deck of cards that they played Oh Hell and Hearts with.
Well, if they got Velanimo, they must have cycled for a few games. Excuse the cycling thing. So it's still one I need to play there, Ryan. But...
I love how a lot of your puns lately, you've had to like immediately explain yourself after, and it just makes it even better.
Just in case, yeah. I feel like...
In case someone doesn't get the pun because it's so deep cut.
A disservice to it. Yeah, I did a bit of stand-up comedy, and I did a few Shakespeare jokes and didn't give context. So sometimes it went whoosh. You know, and we can't have that, can we, on the podcast. I need to make sure I've got the ball over the net, as they say.
Of course. All right, well, that was all of your lists of games that you guys have been bringing with you. So we appreciate you responding back to that answer. That was a fun little activity.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Really nice. So many people reached out as well and told us what they were taking away and enjoying.
Yeah. And by the time this episode airs, we'll be full in the swing of summer. And hopefully you are bringing these games with you. We'd love to hear the games that you did bring with you and what got played, whether it's in words and or pictures. Let us know what it was you played. You can join our Discord server. There'll be the link in the episode to join in there. Or you can send it to us via email at tricktalkers@gmail.com.
Yes, always a pleasure. Never a chore. Yes. Thank you. This is the awkward outro bit now, right? This is...
Yeah. Let's try to be not awkward. Can we do that? Like, can we... We're already awkward now on this one. But going forward, let's see if we can find a way to not be awkward.
See if we can do it.
Yeah, I believe in us.
People would think there's something wrong with us if we made it really smooth. But
yeah, you forgot a pun one time and somebody reached out to you. And I think so it was
what's
Justin.
What's wrong with Patrick, right? What's wrong with Patrick? Has his life changed? Or, he's failed his challenge and now he's not doing puns. What's happening?
Yeah, so I'm glad people are paying attention to notice if anything's amiss.
Something's awry. I've made a concerted effort to include a few in this episode, to infuse a few in there. So
there you go. Well, otherwise, though, this has been another episode of Trick Talkers. Thank you again so much for listening. You can always visit our link tree, which will have all the links to our Twitter, Discord, BGG page, Patreon, our merch store, and more. And that link is linktr.ee/TrickTalkers. Linktree is always a weird link to have to say.
It's always
we'll
a
put
weird
it in
link.
The show notes, though.
Yeah, I appreciate you listening.
All right.
Just to make it as awkward as I can now, because we've already established it. So, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you on the next episode.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.